You are listening to Aftersight. This recording is intended solely for individuals who are blind or have low vision.
Thank you for joining us for the Colorado Outdoors Magazine, read by John Arnold, featuring articles from the Colorado Outdoors Magazine website, coloradooutdoorsmag.com. Wildlife Society Annual Meeting, posted on February 21, 2024, by Ryan Jones. CPW staff bring their expertise to Colorado Chapter. The Colorado Chapter of the Wildlife Society Annual Meeting, held at Pueblo Convention Center from February 7th through 9th, was a gathering of minds dedicated to excellence in wildlife stewardship. Among the highlights were presentations from Colorado Parks and Wildlife staff showcasing the agency's efforts and priorities in wildlife science, management, and conservation. Day 1 highlights. After an engaging morning of presentations, the afternoon featured a special symposium on sensitive species conservation and management in Colorado. CPW Grouse Conservation Program Manager Kathy Griffin moderated a diverse array of presentations, including Colorado's 2025 State Wildlife Action Plan, CPW Species Conservation Unit Supervisor David Clute, and CPW State Wildlife Action Plan Coordinator Casey Miller emphasized awareness, alignment, access, and action in conservation planning efforts. Balancing management for Gunnison sage grouse, CPW Grouse Conservation Program Manager Kathy Griffith and Whit Blair from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service discussed managing Gunnison sage grouse populations across state and federal jurisdictions. White nose syndrome in little brown myotis. CPW Species Conservation Program Manager Daniel Newbaum stressed the importance of considering eco-regional differences in species management. Unlikely connections, prairie dogs and ptarmigan. CPW Species Conservation Coordinator Amy Seglund explored parallels between prairie dog and ptarmigan habitats, highlighting the interconnectedness of wildlife ecosystems. Day 2 highlights. The Wolf Ecology and Reintroduction Session provided a comprehensive overview of wolf restoration efforts in Colorado. CPW Wolf Program Manager Eric O'Dell discussed the planning process for gray wolf restoration, balancing scientific, economic, and social considerations. This plan, a result of extensive stakeholder engagement, addresses both wildlife biological needs and societal concerns. Quote, "It was very productive to present what the Colorado Parks and Wildlife Wolf Team has accomplished over the last 3 years at the Colorado Chapter of the Wildlife Society meetings in Pueblo. Providing a first-hand perspective to this gathering of wildlife professionals from around the state, representing federal and state agencies and private industry, allowed CPW staff to tell the stories and answer questions about what we've been doing to meet the objectives of the state statute, as well as what is planned for the coming years," end quote, O'Dell said. Additionally, CPW wildlife biologist Nathan Seward presented findings on enhancing Gunnison sage-grouse habitat through wet meadow restoration. Collaboration with various organizations has proven effective in improving wet meadow drought resilience, with low-tech restoration structures contributing significantly to habitat enhancement and rangeland improvement. Quote, "It's exciting to share the results of our habitat enhancement work that we've been doing over the past decade to bolster threatened Gunnison sage-grouse populations. Wet meadows and mesic areas make up a small fraction of the sagebrush ecosystem, but are disproportionately important to wildlife and livestock," end quote, said Stewart. Quote, "The loss of natural water storage capacity in these systems is of great concern in these arid landscapes. No matter how you feel about climate change, we can all agree wet meadow restoration is a no-regret strategy that conserves water and promotes wildlife and land-based livelihoods," end quote. Keynote address. In the evening session, attendees heard from Jeff Davis, who assumed the role of Director of Colorado Parks and Wildlife in May 2023. With a background spanning nearly 23 years with the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife, Jeff brings a wealth of experience in conservation policy and habitat management to CPW, During his address, Director Davis emphasized the importance of collaboration, stewardship, and innovation in addressing the complex challenges facing Colorado's wildlife and natural resources. Quote, "I'll tell you what gives me hope, though, my kids," said Director Davis. "And now having the privilege of being in the seat of authority is why I fight the way I do in order to secure a pathway forward. This is an opportunity for us all to be the bridge that connects future generations to a better future," end quote. Drawing on his extensive experience in crafting legislation, engaging diverse stakeholders, and navigating budgetary constraints, Davis underscored the critical role of CPW in preserving Colorado's rich biodiversity and outdoor heritage. Conclusion. The 2024 annual meeting of the Colorado chapter of the Wildlife Society provided valuable insights into ongoing conservation efforts in the state. From gray wolf restoration to habitat enhancement projects, the presentations showcased CPW's mission to perpetuate the wildlife resources of the state, provide a quality state park system, and to provide enjoyable and sustainable outdoor recreation opportunities that educate and inspire current and future generations. Ryan Jones is a visual coordinator for Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Winter in the Northwest. The Power Collaboration. Posted on March 21, 2023 by Rachel Gonzalez. Winter has been tough for elk, deer, and pronghorn in northwest Colorado. The phrase, "we've gotten a lot of snow," is something we've often heard on the streets of Craig and other communities in the northwest corner of the state. Prolonged snow and extreme cold since October 2022 have made it difficult for wildlife to get much-needed food to survive the winter months. In some locations, wildlife is walking on 30 inches of hard-packed snow, making it impossible to access the food below. In an area known for its large residential elk herds and quality year-round habitat, hearing that another round of snow and cold was coming for the northwest part of the state was the last thing local staff wanted to hear. As the snow continued to fall, food became even more scarce. Ranchers and landowners began noticing an increase in the number of elk getting into feed lines set out for cattle, horses, and other livestock. Something ranchers can't afford to have happen. It's an issue not just for the hay they eat, but also for the safety of their livestock. Elk can be very aggressive and will stomp livestock and their newborns to get to the hay. In January, Colorado Parks and Wildlife staff in the Craig area knew something needed to be done. As damage claims continued to increase, local staff began working on a plan to address the ongoing concerns and reduce increasing conflict. On February 2nd, wildlife officers began a baiting operation to reduce conflict with livestock and game damage from elk. Today, game damage has become a full-time job for district wildlife managers, and it's not a one-size-fits-all approach for everyone. For district wildlife managers, this meant sitting down with ranchers and landowners in the district to identify what the issues are and solutions for those issues. For some, the solution is to have CPW replenish the hay lost to elk. For others, it's using hay provided by CPW to bait the elk away from their feed lines. In most cases, CPW is providing the hay, but the landowners are doing the work of creating and managing the bait lines. CPW has helped some landowners bait on their own by plowing snow, making it easier to access locations further back on their land to prevent elk from walking back and forth between the bait line and their feed lines. CPW staff has been responsible for managing the bait line for a few landowners as well. On a frigid morning in late February, local staff gathered at the CPW shop in Craig to load hay and equipment. After a quick meeting to go over that day's plans, the team set off for the first of several deliveries for the day. When the team arrived at their first location along the Yampa River drainage near Mabel, the temperature read -9°F. Although you could see every breath they took as they prepared the snowcat and snowmobiles, the frigid temperatures were something they were used to after several days of below zero temperatures. At this location, baiting operations will help five or six landowners in the area, baiting away around 200 to 250 head of elk. Using the snowcat, District Wildlife Managers Seth Schwalwart and Evan Jones made their way to the larger bait area where the hay would be placed, enticing the elk to the area. Just over the hill, Assistant Area Wildlife Managers John Lambert and Mike Swarrow used small bales of hay to create a line leading elk at a nearby ranch to the larger bait site where DWM Schwollert and Jones were working. When the lines were set, the teams went back to the vehicles to load equipment, then to the shop to pick up the next load and head out once again. This back-and-forth routine has become second nature for local staff. Days start early in the morning and end long after the sun has set, 7 days a week. District wildlife managers are dedicated to ensuring that they are doing everything they can to help the local community, even during another round of snow. Between deliveries, DWMs are calling and checking in with landowners and ranchers in their districts, making sure they have everything they need or learning about new issues they or their neighbors may be dealing with. For Assistant Area Wildlife Manager Mike Swarrow, that time is spent reaching out to local hay producers to see if they had hay available for purchase. Since the baiting operation began in January, area wildlife staff have distributed over 1,000 tons of hay to around 100 landowners and ranchers in Craig, Maybell, Rangeley, and surrounding areas. In addition to hay, CPW has worked closely with the local community to provide panels to protect haystacks. From the start, CPW's goal has been to reduce the conflict with wildlife by providing just enough to lead elk and deer away and encourage them to move on. The goal has never been to provide enough food to survive the winter. This has been a community effort, not only for Colorado Parks and Wildlife. Without the help and support of the ranchers, landowners, and community members, this would not be possible. Local staff are grateful for the support and patience from everyone. This ongoing operation could not happen without the financial support from the Habitat Partnership Program, HPP, State Council. As of March 15th, the council has provided over $350,000 of funding for hay, deer pellets, paneling, and snow removal. Funding for HPP comes from the sale of big game licenses in Colorado. While local staff have seen improvements in conditions for some locations, including the opening of south-facing slopes, providing easy access to vegetation, local CPW staff can't stress enough that we still have a long way to go. The next 30 to 90 days will be crucial for wildlife survival. Staff are monitoring the situation, but would like to remind everyone that, while they hope their efforts will help all animals in this area of the state, with over 50,000 year-round elk and deer herds spread across 10,200 square miles, 6.5 million acres, it's simply not possible.
We've been having a heck of a winter. I'm standing on hard-packed snow. We've got probably about 3 foot of standing hard-packed snow out here. It's so hard that the elk are walking on top of it in a lot of spots. And so it's really hard for them to dig down to get to anything that's underneath. This morning in Maybell, it's about 0 degrees. That's about our average temperature here the last several days, down to, you know, minus 15 or 20 at night and up to about 15 or 20 during the day. And just pretty tough conditions. Today we're conducting a baiting operation for about 200 to 250 head of elk in the Maybell corridor along the Yampa River drainage. We're influencing probably about 5 or 6 different landowners and trying to mostly prevent conflict with domestic livestock. So there's several different cattle operations in the valley here with several different feed lines of just domestic livestock, and so what we're trying to do is basically bait the elk away from those. So you can see here we just laid out a bait line this morning. You can still probably see some of the elk on the hill that we just pushed off of it, but basically we're trying to keep them baited away from those producers. With the baiting operation, our goal is to minimize conflict with domestic livestock. Our goal isn't to give the elk 100% as much nutrition as they need to get through the winter. Our goal is to minimize the conflict. What we've been doing today with the snow machines is taking out little bales of hay and kind of scattering a trail so that we can catch these elk as they kind of move back and forth along the river corridor. And then at one point or another, they'll run into that bait trail, and then that's just enough hay to kind of give them something to follow into the main area where we want to be baiting them. So if we were feeding elk, we'd be trying to get get them as much as we could to help their body condition and that, but that's not our goal. Our goal is to minimize the conflict with livestock. Another thing to keep in mind is certainly CWD. This group here is about 200, 250 elk now, and it started as, you know, three or four different bunches of 40 to 70 elk. And now they're all in one spot. And, you know, we're solving a lot of landowner conflict issues here by this operation, but on a larger scale, we need to be thinking about that down the line as far as transmission of CWD when we congregate animals like that. Every landowner is different, and it's not a one-size-fits-all approach for solving their problems. So a lot of times we actually need to go out to the ranch and sit down, have a cup of coffee, and visit with them and see what's going on, and then we can figure out the best approach from there. So.
We can't, as ranchers, can't afford to have the elk on our feed grounds, not only for the hay they eat, but for safety of our cattle. The division has really, really stepped up, and really our cooperation with them this year is exceptional. We really appreciate them. We appreciate these guys, and they're baiting these elk off and trying to help us.
Like I said, game damage is pretty much a full-time job right now. So we're baiting on several different locations that actually CPW is doing in-house, and then also keeping our landowners supplied with hay to bait away from their livestock conflicts, or just going out and looking at whatever new issues they might have, like if they had a new hay stack get busted into and they need panels to fix it.
We've distributed about 750 tons of hay so far in the Yampa Valley and along the White River there too, out towards Rangeley. We're working with about 100 different landowners at this point, probably affecting around 5,000 elk when you kind of put everything together.
Something that we need to keep in mind moving forward this winter is just what we can handle and what's realistic. We've got thousands and thousands of animals on the landscape, so unfortunately, you know, we can't impact all of them. We're targeting high conflict areas and just baiting those critters away from domestic conflict at this point. HPP has been pretty essential to funding the operations that we're doing out here. They're paying for a lot of this hay. We've exhausted all of our state wildlife area hay in the region. And so at this point, we're buying a lot of hay from different producers to keep these different baiting operations going and to keep giving hay to landowners that are dealing with conflict as we can. So all that funding's come through HPP.
A huge thanks to all landowners that we are working with and that we haven't even heard from, because some of them are just dealing with it on their own. So we really appreciate the help and the patience with elk. It's a community effort, not only Parks and Wildlife, but all of our local ranchers and landowners and even citizens of Craig and Rangeley and Meeker. Everybody's stepped up to help out in some form or capacity. So it's kind of been all the way across the board.
Rachel Gonzalez is the Public Information Officer for Colorado Parks and Wildlife's Northwest Region. Turkey hunting. Three options for better success. Posted on April 14th, 2020 by Nate Zielinski. With the arrival of spring, many people look forward to nice weather and to getting outside. To a hunter, spring is all about the sound of a gobbling turkey or the vision of a tom in full strut approaching your decoy. In Colorado, over-the-counter turkey hunting licenses are easily purchased and affordable. Public access and hunting grounds are readily available, and the adrenaline rush of hearing a turkey gobble is second to none. As a hunter, you'll find yourself always trying new tactics, pushing the envelope to create the most successful tactics. Here are a few tips that you can use to create a successful hunt this spring. Locating birds. In reality, if you have turkeys near you, the rest is fairly easy. The biggest mistake is not being near turkeys. However, many hunters spend days in the field calling and having amazing blind and decoy sets and yet go home empty-handed. A lot of hunters even blame themselves for things like having the wrong set or being bad at calling turkeys. But in my opinion, the first and most important step is locating birds and making sure you're on birds before any type of approach or move is made. The ideal hunt would start the evening before your first day out in the field. Important time spent scouting, finding turkeys, and roosting them, pinpointing where they are roosting for the night. That way, the next morning, you know exactly where to go. If scouting and locating birds the day before is not an option for you, then locating birds early in the morning while birds are still in their roost is the next best option. Turkeys tend to be very vocal from the comfort of their roost early in the morning. While hunting, I tend to cover ground as fast as possible in the key hours of the morning when these birds are talking from their roost. I will hike, ride an ATV, or cover ground in my vehicle until I locate birds. Generally speaking, I hope to hear them talking without encouragement, but if they're not freely talking, then I can gobble to these birds. It's kind of funny, but to do this, I literally put my finger in my mouth and make a gobble sound. More times than not, they answer back and reveal their location. On turkeys that are pressured and or not quite talking yet, these birds might need a reaction to cause a shock gobble. My favorite technique for this is using an air horn. Yep, you heard that right. I blow an air horn with short bursts, and turkeys, out of reaction, will gobble back and give up their location. Three options for setting up your hunt. Let's talk about your approach when deciding where to set up. There are three options when planning a setup. Option 1. If you know where the birds are roosting, begin approaching the roost prior to sunrise. Set up a decoy and consider yourself as close to the roosting area as possible. Stealth is the name of the game with this approach. Option 2. If you're hunting on flatter ground or farmed fields, turkeys tend to build great pattern as to where they feed daily. If you have a pattern on turkeys in a feeding area, then this is a great way to create success. Set up a blind or hide in these areas where the birds are feeding daily, and simply wait. Again, getting into these areas undetected is key. Try to be in these areas at least an hour or two before you expect the birds to show up. Option 3. The run-and-gun approach. I tend to really prefer this technique when hunting mountain birds simply because their daily patterns are not as consistent as birds in flatter country. When I say run-and-gun, I'm typically calling to the turkeys, and when they respond, I am approaching them. The biggest mistake with this approach is when hunters hear a turkey, they typically set up immediately and expect the turkeys to cover all the ground and come right to them. Well, turkey hunting can be thought of like a relationship. If each member of the relationship gives at least 50% of their energy and commitment to the other member, then it's a healthy, strong relationship and generally thrives. But if one member is putting out 90%, the turkey, and the other 10%, the hunter, then it's rarely a successful relationship. Back to turkeys. Many hunters find birds, whether hearing or seeing them, and immediately set up. And when you actually think about this, it's the exact situation of the hunter putting in 10% and expecting the turkey to put in 90% and cover the majority of the ground to come into the hunter. I'm not saying it doesn't work, but there are many occasions that it doesn't. When I hear a bird calling, I will head towards the turkey and cut the distance down. I continue toward the turkey until I am 100% confident that the bird can hear me or that I have the turkey's attention and it's moving to me. Once I know the bird is committed, then I set up. Safety first. The best way to prevent an accident in the field is to use a safe hunting strategy. As you prepare for the hunt, consider these 10 tactics and incorporate them into your safe hunting plan. Number 1. Avoid wearing clothing that has the same colors as a turkey. Red, white, and blue are the colors found in wild birds. Number 2. Protect your back. Find a tree or rock outcropping to back up against and protect your backside. This may protect you from the pellets fired from another hunter, as well as provide cover for the area you cannot easily see if another hunter is approaching your location. Number 3. Camouflage from head to toe. Not only will this aid in your attempt to remain unseen by an approaching gobbler, but it will keep you hidden from another hunter who is walking in your area. If another hunter is approaching your position, remain still and call to the hunter in a clear voice. Do not use a whistle or use a call. Announce your presence without movement. Number 4. Place decoys in a location that you can see the gobbler approaching to your gun side to prevent having to move to make a shot. This placement also prevents you from being in a direct line with the decoy if an unseen hunter attempts to shoot your decoy. Number 5. When traveling to a hunting location, transporting decoys or a harvested bird, wear hunter orange, a vest, or a hat. Place the harvested bird in a game bag or wrap the bird in an orange vest. Do not sling a harvest bird over your shoulder and walk out of your hunting area. Number 6. Always look beyond your target to ensure the area is safe. Do not shoot skylined birds, not even with a shotgun. Number 7. Clearly identify your target as a legal bird. In the spring turkey season, a bird must have a visible beard. Do not shoot at movement in the brush, even if you hear a gobble. Number 8. Do not carry a loaded firearm in your vehicle. Completely unload the firearm before traveling. Number 9. Inspect your ammunition before your hunt. Ensure you are carrying the correct gauge of ammunition for the shotgun you are carrying. Remember, you will typically be loading your firearm in the dark. And number 10, never stalk a wild turkey. The enjoyment of the spring season is calling the bird to you. With the number of realistic decoys in the field today, what you are stalking may just be another hunter. Planning your days in the field. The last thing I want to cover is when you hunt during the season. The excitement of the average hunter is at a boiling point on opening day, and many hunters either tag out on opening day or hunt extremely hard for a few days and end up giving up before the peak of the season hits. At the beginning of the season, it can be common that the hens are not at a breeding state yet. Therefore, calling and working birds is slightly tougher. As the season progresses, the breeding season peaks and the birds become far more responsive. Again, a lot of hunters give up before the peak hits. With that said, my favorite portion of the season is the end. By the last few days of the season, a majority of the hens are on their nest, and the gobblers are extremely frustrated that there are fewer and fewer hens. When this happens, they become more vocal and cover more ground daily, looking for breedable hens. Stay safe and enjoy the season. Nate Zielinski is a professional walleye angler and all-species guide based in Colorado and has guided and tournament fished all across the country. More on Nate can be found at tightlineoutdoors.com. Thank you for joining us for the Colorado Outdoors Magazine, read by John Arnold.
If you enjoyed this program, please register for our free services at www.aftersight.org or by calling 303-786-7777.